Richard, I really appreciate you sitting down with us. Thanks so much for taking some time to talk to us today.
Thank you very much.
I know you are a Bush Fellow this year, and you've been working on your PhD dissertation, and you've spent your career in many ways peacemaking, and is, I guess, a way to put it.
There are several of us that have been involved, you know, with this peacemaking, and right now they're building a justice center in Pine Ridge, and it's almost completed. And at the center of this really large justice center, there's a round room, and that round room has been designated for peacemaking. And so we wanted to figure out a way to get more people involved in peacemaking, you know, and generating more interest in the peacemaking process. Because I found that a lot of times we have a lot of people that want to invest in the reservation, you know, and they want to invest in this area, but it's our own internal conflicts that seem to cause a lot of our, you know, our issues, you know, and I think if we can find ways to solve these internal conflicts, you know, I think that we can go make more progress, you know, progress toward toward a better future, you know, for our young people. And so that's one of the things that I've, as part of the Bush Fellowship, is that I've been exploring peacemaking, you know, finding ways to basically have people sit down at the table and talk things out, you know, rather than, you know, not talking about it or, you know, avoiding the issue altogether, you know, and that's kind of difficult, you know, to embrace conflict. You know, a lot of times we avoid conflict, you know, and it seems to just fester and fester, and sometimes it gets worse. It begins to involve more people, and then it just gets worse. And so finding ways to deal with conflict early on, I think, is the positive way to deal with it. And I think that developing these mechanisms for conflict, you know, we have all of them already. You know, we've got elders in our community, you know, respected elders and people that they call Nacha, which are our headmen, you know, of our extended families. We have them, and so it's already in place. You know, we just need to bring it together. And I've been doing research, you know, on the peacemaking process. I've visited other tribes that have been doing peacemaking. 2 weeks ago, I went to Arizona and New Mexico, and I visited with some of the peacemakers from the Diné Nation. One of the things that I found out there was, you know, they started their peacemaking court in, I think, in 1984. The person that I talked to was actually my brother-in-law. His name is Raymond Dill. He's a peacemaker, but he's also a healer. He's a Navajo medicine man. He said that this is a really old process, you know, this peacemaking. They even do peacemaking with DWIs. And so what they do, he said, you bring in the whole family and whoever else is involved in the family, and you sit down and with the person that was caught drunk driving, and they put the responsibility on him. You know, what are you going to do? You know, what are you going to do to make it right? You know, because you impacted all these people that are sitting here in this table, and then probably some other that aren't here. And so how are you going to make this right? You know, and I think that that's a good way to do it, because the responsibility needs to be on that person that committed the DWI. And so I think that, or any type of crime, it needs to be on them, you know, and what are they going to do? You know, what are you going to do to make things right?
You mentioned that the new Tribal Justice Center on Pine Ridge has a big room that's a circle that, mm-hmm. that people can come together and do peacemaking. Mm-hmm. The circle is, of course, has a traditional significance within mm-hmm. Lakota culture. And this seems like a way that you're part of that cultural renaissance. You're reincorporating the culture within the justice system. Is that the right way to put it?
I think that's right. I think that's a good way to put it, because I don't think that, you know, they would have put that that room in there, you know, if there wasn't a purpose, you know, for the peacemaking. And so I think that's really a positive move on the part of the administration, you know, part of the public safety, you know. I think of moving in that direction, you know, and that it could impact everything, you know, that once you have the peacemaking in place. I've done several cases of peacemaking on the reservation. Usually the attorney general will call me every now and then, and she would ask me to take a case, you know, peacemaking, and I would do that. She usually puts it together for me, and then I'll just work with the families. But then it's different from the other ways of working with the justice system, because you have to want to be involved with this, you know, process. If you don't want to, then nobody can force you to be a part of this process. You know, it's got to be your own, you know, volition, your own decision, you know, to do this. And so I think that those things are positive, you know, and moving in a positive direction.
I know you've done a lot in the past on working to combat the suicide rate, and I'm sure you're still involved in some of that as well.
Yeah, it's always an issue, you know, that just today or yesterday, I had a man came in. I think he was from Durham, North Carolina. He was a MD. He started working with the tapping. Have you ever heard of the tapping, right away they start tapping your eyebrow, and then they use the point system on your face? He came and taught us how to do that, how to work with trauma, you know, with the tapping. He worked with me here, you know, and really made a really big difference, you know, because the way that we think about things can be changed, you know, and that's what trauma is. You can, the way we think about things. And he works with people that get into car accidents, helps them to deal with those traumas, but also any type of loss. One of the things that I know about trauma is that there was a study done where they said that 7 out of 10 Native Americans will experience some type of severe trauma within their lifetime. And so it only, I guess, behooves us to begin looking at ways to deal with trauma, you know, and using whatever technique that can come down the line. And a lot of suicides happen because of trauma, you know, because someone has experienced trauma and then they don't know how to deal with it, you know, they're thinking about it all the time, and pretty soon they just want to end it. They don't want to think that way, think about things anymore, you know. You get tired of thinking about things that happen in your lifetime. You get tired of thinking about trauma. You just don't want to think anymore. You just want to numb it out, you know. You don't want to think about it. And I'm pretty sure people that have wanted to commit suicide, that's the way they are too. They don't want to think about things anymore. You know, it gets too much to think about. They don't want to be them anymore, you know. But it's been a while since I've done anything on suicide. I went to the Fort Peck community, and I did some work with their community. They invited me up there, and I did a series of workshops for them, you know, and on suicide and also historical trauma. You know, I did some stuff on that. And I think that any way that we can deal with those issues, I think the better off we would be, you know, the better.
Something that non-natives might not understand, that the impact of trauma, or that it maybe it occurs more often in Native communities because of the economic situation than it does in non-Native communities. But there's a lot more to overcome in that sense. Is that accurate? Am I saying that?
Yeah, I think like I said, there's more. It seems like there's more trauma that happens, or they experience more trauma, and I know that there's more young people, you know, that get involved, and I think that there's more violence, you know, here, and usually it's whenever people are drinking. One of the statistics that I talked with Joe Amiot, he was our environmental safety person at IHS, one time I sat down and visited with him, and he said they wanted to work on some issues, and they chose safety belts. And that's what they chose to work on, was because they felt that they can save more lives using safety belts. But then they said their number one issue on the reservation was actually head injuries. And he said these head injuries come from people that are in fighting, and then they get, you know, hit each other on the head, and said they get severe head injuries. But he said that was at the time that he was there, he said that was too much to work on, you know. So they decided to work with the seatbelt issue instead. And I was just listening to the radio this morning with the public safety, and they said they were able to like cut that in half, you know, just with their prevention efforts, and also ticketing people for not wearing safety belts. And so they were able to bring the fatality rate way down, you know, from and they can document it, you know. And nowadays, that's everything. We have to document everything, you know, and how we impact things.
You have a lot of irons in the fire, I know.
Yeah.
Richard Ironclad, it's always so great to talk to you. Well, again, Palamile, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you very much.